Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. It's Tuesday. You know what that means. I'm joined once again by the great Justice Mosqueda. You can find him here every Tuesday on the Pack-A-Day Podcast. You can find him at acmepackingcompany.com. And of course, you can find him on Twitter at JUMOSQ. Justice, it is awesome to have you back. How the heck have you been?
Great. Big Oregon win on Saturday. Packers win on Sunday. Can't really complain about anything. So I'm fine.
What more could you possibly want in life? A huge win for Oregon on Saturday. And obviously, I wouldn't say easy win, but like a dominant victory over the Arizona Cardinals on Sunday. I want to ask you quickly about that end of that Oregon. What did you think about the 12 guys on the field penalty at the end? A little strategy going on at the end?
Yeah, good. Lanning said, I think today, he confirmed that they did it on purpose. They called a timeout before that, then debated on the sideline whether or not to put 12 on the field or not. Good. If the rule's in there, use it.
Your
quarterback can't count.
I love strategy like that, unequivocally. There's a couple things. One, why stop at 12? Why not go 21?
People posted the Buddy Ryan Polish defense thing. That's three extra linebackers on the field. They weren't 12. They were let's put 15 on here. You're not getting a yard.
Yeah. There's interesting. And then I do wonder at some point, because everything just gets gamed out eventually, right? Eventually for those of you who don't know, they put an extra guy on the field that helped waste time at the end. It really took, Ohio State of any real opportunity to win because it was a really smart strategic decision at the end of that game. You wonder if there needs to be something of spirit of the game, fines or something, if this something like this would continue to happen. I don't know where it goes from here, but I agree with you. I any nerdy strategy thing, I absolutely love and I am all for it, but it'll be interesting to see if both the NFL and college football try to make sure that things like that don't happen, or if they just don't care, if they're cool with it as well.
It's a hard thing to legislate too.
Right? It is.
I mean, how long have we been, especially with clock rules and stuff, college football, where you're seeing a lot more no huddle. I mean, how long have they been trying to legislate? Is the intent of guys going down, whether it's a real injury or not a real injury, right? So,
yep.
So legislate whether you put a 12th man on the field on purpose or not is
very difficult
thing. Yeah. So I don't know how you change that rule.
Yeah, and maybe that's why it's 12 and not 20. If you do 20, it's probably fairly obvious with 12. It's a lot tougher to get a slap on the wrist, although he admitted it, like you said. So I don't know. It's just an interesting thing. It's really fun football strategy. But let's get to Packers, Cardinals. And as always, Justice, I will give you the floor to start out. Where do we want to nerd out about first this week?
I guess the first thing that comes up, we talked about how dynamic Kyler is as a quarterback. Obviously, that's a pretty big thing that they do on the offensive side. I don't have the stats right in front of me, but I know people pointed out, we've gone against a lot of mobile quarterbacks to start this year, and they haven't done a lot of damage on the ground.
Nope.
That is not something I'm used to, right? Going back to Capers, right? Where it's we're playing a mobile quarterback. This guy has a chance to go 100 yards. We lost to Kaepernick twice in the playoffs, all that stuff. So, feels like we can negate that, which is a pretty big deal.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. I thought this was one of the best things that the defense did the entire weekend. I'm just looking at it now. So Jalen Hurts was 13 carries for 33 yards. Kyler Murray was 7 for 14. Anthony Richardson was 4 for 37. So 24 attempts by those three quarterbacks. 47, 77, 84 yards by those three of the most mobile dynamic quarterbacks in the game in Richardson, Hurts, and Kyler Murray, obviously not named Lamar Jackson. But outside of that, three super dynamic QBs and 24 carries for 84 yards in those three games combined. Obviously 2-1 in those games, didn't do as good of a job against against Jalen Hurts when it came to the passing game, but they really made it so that Kyler Murray and Anthony Richardson were going to have to win with their arm. They couldn't do it. Again, Jalen Hurts did a little bit better, but to your point, I said this almost exactly verbatim. I think it was on the new radio show today. Plug for that, the new Pack-A-Day radio show. But yeah, I think I said it on there where, you know, we're to your exact point, we're just not used to seeing this from a Packers defense. And even when things have been called well, which it hasn't always been the case, it's like the guys haven't gotten the QB to the ground. But in these few games, like, they've done a phenomenal job of making sure that these quarterbacks are not getting space in the open field.
Yeah, I mean, every time Colin broke the pocket, there was an extra guy there, you know, waiting for him to, you know, we're not going to let this guy turn up the sideline for free, right, basically. Yep. And then the other big one was that read option play that they blew up when it was LVN as the read man, and then they sent Evan Williams off the edge as the second guy. And you can kind of game plan for that stuff. That's more of like I'm sure Halfley's really in tune with their tendencies based off of that play call. It's not normal to send two guys off the edge, right? Really from like a math perspective, from a defensive perspective, you're basically one-on-one everywhere else on the field when you're in that situation, right? So you have to be kind of confident that you're going to get read option in those situations. Who knows if it was a formation tendency, spot on the field, down and distance, something like that. But, I mean, perfect play call for that situation. Kyler pulls the ball because he's just locked in on Lucas Van Ness. I mean, when you're running read option, it's a pretty bang-bang play. It's actually a lot easier to see from – you know, broadcast view or something like that, then it is like a quarterback on the field. He's locked into LVN. LVN's going for the dive. He pulls the ball. Evan Williams is just right there in his lap. And you're like, oh my God, we did it. We got it. So, I mean, we heard all this stuff, you know, throughout the spring of whether it's Richard Sherman or someone else who played under Jeff Halfley, right? Just saying, like, he's going to get you ready. You're going to know what plays out of what formations, you know, when these wide receivers are going to come in and out of their breaks, you know, what routes they're going to break at which depths, all that stuff. And that was kind of the first play, I think, where it's like, damn, nailed it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's really fun to see some of the stuff that he's doing on the back end. I thought this was a well-called game by Jeff Halfley. It never felt like Kyler Murray got in any sort of rhythm in anything he was doing. I think a large part of that is due to the fact that he couldn't run in this game. It feels like that's where he kind of gets a little bit of his momentum. And then, you know, he almost feels more comfortable dancing around the pocket. It just felt like the pocket was muddled. They never got, I don't think, great pressure in this game, but the pocket was never really super clean. Anytime that he bailed out, there seemed to be somebody waiting for him. They did spy on a couple plays. They brought a couple guys off the edge. They, you know, kind of just contained with their edges at a couple different plays as well. They threw different things at him. And even just from a zone defense standpoint, it never felt like Kyler could really get a feel for what Green Bay was doing. There was a couple plays where they ran four verts against Green Bay's cover three that worked really well. And they had a couple big completions off of that. Good call on the offense. It's an advantageous look against that particular defense. I don't know if Green Bay had a tell on those plays that Arizona was able to get into it, but they, I think it was the same drive, either same drive or back-to-back drives, one of the two, where they hit two all verts on cover three defense. But outside of that, they just could not get any rhythm going whatsoever.
Yeah, the defense played really well, especially considering all the change in the second. I mean, it's happening every week now. Right. I mean, who knows who's going to line up out there? Edrin Cooper, huge boost in terms of his snap counts. First game he out snapped Isaiah McDuffie this season. I think that's something that we're going to see moving forward. Thought it was interesting. Arizona played a lot of 12 personnel, which, like, I mean, they weren't doing that under Cliff, right?
No.
You know, two tight end sets and stuff. And I thought that was really interesting because it seemed like maybe they wanted to kind of pick apart Green Bay's base defense a little bit more. But I mean, with the way that they're playing Cooper so much, I mean, you can't attack him in the same way you could attack Wilson, like, you know, the Minnesota Vikings did. So that's an interesting development for sure.
And just having Bullard as a big nickel too changes the calculus a little bit on those plays as well. Yeah. I want to start with the defensive alignment because I think that's a really interesting topic of conversation and I'd love to pick your brain on it. So Williams at safety, Bullard in the slot, Keyshawn on the outside, Cooper and Quay as your primary nickel defenders. Is this a tangible, real defense that they can use against everyone? Or is this something that against, you know what, the Rams and the Cardinals, especially once Harrison went down, there's a lack of depth at wide receiver. Again, Puka Nacua, Cooper Kupp out at, for the Rams. It's not like they've got the explosive slot guy. The Cardinals didn't have the explosive slot guy. They played a lot of zone with Bullard in the slot. Is that something that they can continue? Or now do you get to Houston and you've got Tank Dell, you've got Stephon Diggs. Are you going to be able to run those same concepts? Minnesota later in the year again when you've got Addison and Jefferson, can you survive with that same look? Or is this something that Jeff's just going to have to change up every single week? And he's probably going to do so if that is the case, because we know he's just not going to stick with one thing.
It's, I still think the biggest question is corner two. And that's where I sit. So in the slot, all these numbers from NFL Pro, by the way, I'm fighting allergies for my life right now. If you guys,
you're all good, man.
So apologies for that. Keyshawn Nixon, he's averaging 0.7 yards per coverage snap. Javon Bullard is at 0.8, right? So there's really not a big difference there. Meanwhile, at corner, so Jair obviously is still dealing with the ramifications of him being out and then having that bad game against Philadelphia early on in the season, yep. Right? So he's at 0.6 yards per covered snap allowed at outside corner. Yep. Keyshawn, as an outside corner, is at 1.3, which is the same as Stokes, but then Valentine's at 0.3, right? So I still think, like, if we're talking about who's actually played the best, I think you want Carrington out there, but he's not getting opportunities right now. So, I mean, it's very odd because, I mean, we're seeing so much rotation on the defensive front. I mean, it's been, what, 2 weeks in a row that Colby Wooden has outsnapped TJ Slayton, who's, like, technically their quote-unquote starter at defensive tackle. They're four deep on the defensive line. They're rotating four guys in at linebacker. Three safeties are getting in. I just don't understand why Valentine isn't part of this. But I don't know. Maybe he's doing something in practice that we're not seeing, all that stuff. I think that the way that they're rolling it out right now is totally viable. My only question is, can they get better at corner? And then if they get better at corner and it's Valentine and Alexander on the outside, who do you want in the slot? And right now it's kind of, you know, throw your hands up and it's like, just pick one. I mean, rotate them if you want to.
Yeah. I'm intrigued to see how this evolves as well. If anything, if they continue to play like they have been playing, what did Stokes play, like 13 snaps in this one, something like that, right around there? It wasn't much. I would still like to see those snaps go to Carrington Valentine, if nothing else. Even if you're going to put Keyshawn outside that corner and use Bullard in the slot when you go with that sort of look, okay, fine, so be it. Stokes got beat for a touchdown in this game. It just Kyler overthrew it. Like, there was the play in the back corner of the right end zone. Stokes just got beat clean on that play. Like, he barely played, and he gave up what would have been a touchdown-worthy play. Just the, you know, Green Bay got a little bit lucky that Kyler just missed it. Otherwise, that's another touchdown on Eric Stokes's record. And I just haven't seen it with Stokes for, you know, a handful of games now. And going back to last year, the year before that, it's been since his rookie year. So I'm still hoping that they can figure out something there. I would love for Eric Stokes just to start playing better, but I don't know how you can look at it right now and be like, yep, I want Stokes over Valentine. Just, it feels like Valentine's been better. And again, we're talking even still about 12, 13 snaps in this game. I still want those to go to Carrington.
Yeah. Stokes at this point, I think we talked about this last week. I think you use him as a situational guy where it's, you know, hey,
yeah,
Nixon isn't the biggest guy. Jair is not the biggest guy. I mean, I actually thought, you know, maybe going against Marvin Harrison Jr., maybe that's kind of where you wanted to use him type of situation. But if you weren't going to use him against that, I mean,
yeah,
you know, it's like, maybe it's just time to move on, which is fine. I mean, he's gotten opportunities. I understand there was injuries and stuff like that, and his career hasn't gone perfect at this point, but you can't say that you didn't give him a shot, you know?
No, he's had ample opportunities. Yeah, we'll see what the rest of the season brings, and I hope he just turns it around and tears it up, but it has not been off to a great start so far this season. I want to go to linebacker. We mentioned Edgerrin Cooper. I thought he was really, really fun in this game. He had a really good run stop, ran up the seam in a cover two look, had a couple other plays where he rallied to the football. I just, it's like you can feel his speed out there on the field. I still struggle with what Quay's doing out there right now. Like, I don't know. There's just nothing that feels to me that Quay is doing anything above average at the moment, and some things maybe not even average. I don't know what the other option is, but I don't know. I love the way that Cooper's playing, and I'm still struggling a little bit with Quay.
You are justified. I don't know what else to say about that other than, yeah, I mean, sometimes he's missing run fits. I think there's an epidemic in the NFL right now when it comes to hook zones, which is usually what these, you know, interior linebackers are doing, especially, you know, if they're in a nickel set or something like that. These guys are just not getting depth. Like there was one time, I can't remember if it was a dig. It was something right off his ear. And he's like, he took his zone drop and he went backwards maybe 2 yards. And I'm like, brother, I've stood next to Kyler Murray. I'm 5'8 and change. Okay.
Yep.
5'9 on a good day. Kyler is not 5'10.
No.
He's not going to drop a ball 2 yards in front of his offensive lineman.
Yeah.
That is not what he's going to do. Get your ass back. Right. So I definitely think that there's plenty of work to do with Quay at this point. I think McDuffie and Wilson, you're not really worried about them doing their jobs. It's just they just have limited athleticism. And Cooper, the arrow seems to be going up. I'm definitely, unless I know, like, it's a fast running back out of the backfield and he's going to run a wheel route like McDuffie got done against Saquon in week 1, I think I worry about Quay more on a down-to-down basis than I do the other linebackers at this point. So it'll be interesting. I mean, they don't – I mean, has Quay taken every snap this season?
If it's not close, it's close. Yeah. I don't know. I don't think he's been taken off the field. I can't remember a play he's been taken off the field, and I don't think he's had any injuries. I'm going to take it one step further. Not only is Quay the linebacker I worry about the most, I think he's the defender I worry about the most on the field. Maybe Stokes. Stokes and him are probably in that same category. Those are the two. And I get it's never going to be perfect. There's always going to be somebody that is maybe being picked on a little bit more or whatever, but you know, again, we there's two other linebackers that are in the rotation in McDuffie and Wilson. You've got a third round pick in Tyron Hopper. You've got a second round pick that's looked great so far. It doesn't seem like there's any inkling. Like he's not coming off the field.
And Cooper's taking, which is part of it, right? It's that, you know, this guy was a guy who missed the entire preseason. This guy was a guy who was basically a quarterback spy running chase. Like we stop mobile quarterbacks. We're playing in the SEC type of guy. For A&M, and he's developing into a real linebacker. And that's when you get the juxtaposition between Quay and Cooper's progression, and you're like, all right, you know, if one guy is developing and the other guy isn't, at what point do you put that on the player and not the coaching staff, right? And I think that's what's frustrating the most.
For sure. I tweeted this out a little bit ago. I just finished up my defensive grades. And again, not that this is always perfect, not that PFF is always perfect. My season grade so far, I've got Edrian Cooper at a +1.85, Quay Walker at a -2.65. PFF has Cooper at a 78.2, Quay Walker at a 47.1. So both PFF and I have Cooper well ahead of Quay. I have McDuffie ahead of Quay. I have Wilson ahead of Quay, and in a pretty significant way. Like I said, it's just been a struggle, and there are times where you see these flat, a little bit of flashes here and there, and you're like, okay, I can kind of see it. And you want to kind of rally around it and be like, all right, maybe it's coming. Maybe it's coming, but we're in year three. Like this is the third year. I know sometimes it takes players a different amount of time to click, but it's like, it's kind of, now's the time. He needs to step up and play better.
And the interesting thing too, is like when he shows his flashes, it's like not really linebacker.
It's right? more it's just like athlete.
Him stunting, him doing all those things. So I don't know, man. Like, this wasn't – we all knew that this wasn't the game, so I'm not going to harp on the pass rush thing again, right?
Yeah.
In terms of the defensive ends getting home and stuff like that. But I don't know. Could you figure out how to play him on the edge a little bit on third downs and stuff like that? Like, I just don't – like, I guess you're limited athletically with either Wilson or McDuffie playing nickel next to Cooper or something, but I don't know. That's the position where athleticism matters the most. And it's like, we're not getting enough there. So Quay's kind of good at it. I mean, would it be the worst thing in the world if he got a couple snaps there?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm ready for it to try anything at this point. You know, do you maybe try at some point? point in some obvious passing situations, you go Cooper and Oladapo at linebacker or something. I don't even know. Like, I'm just ready to like throw some things out there.
Oladapo wasn't even active in this game, right?
No, I don't think he, I don't remember. He may not have been. He's only been active for a couple games so far, and it's all been special team stuff. He, I mean, he's trapped at safety, right? Like, you're trying to figure out ways to get Williams and Bullard on the field as much as possible, and you don't have enough snaps to go around for those guys who absolutely need to be on the field. He's going to be in no man's land for a while. And that's why I say, like, is there a linebacker role that you can maybe fit him into? But it is, it's going to be tough sledding for him at safety for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, for sure.
Let's go to, did you have anything on the defensive front or should we go to offense?
No, I mean, I just don't think the Arizona offensive line is very good, honestly. I mean, again, the biggest thing for me there, we knew they weren't just going to pin their ears back and go as pass rushers this week, right? And then on the defensive interior, it's TJ Slayton is the fourth most played guy not even the second week in a row. I mean, it might have been multiple weeks in a row, but the fact that Devontae Wyatt is out is pretty notable that he's the fourth most played guy. It just seems like he's on a fixed snap count, and it does not matter who's in front of him. They're just not going to play him more than like 20 snaps a game.
For me, the defensive line, Kyler Murray, 7 carries, 14 yards. James Conner, 7 carries, 24 yards. They did their job, in my opinion, with just that, like that in and of itself. And again, this wasn't going to be one of those games where you saw aggressive defensive ends and defensive tackles getting up the field. They were containing. They did a great job on that. And I thought overall they played pretty well, just not spectacular. Let's go to the offensive side of the ball. Most important question I have for you, Justice. Is Gold Jacket Romeo Doubs back in play? Is Strong Hands Romeo Doubs back in play? For those who don't know, when Romeo does well, he's got the picture of Romeo and the gold jacket that he's posting on Twitter. And Strong Hands Romeo Doubs has been the hashtag for a couple of years now. Are we back in the good graces with Romeo Doubs with the two memes of choice?
Yeah, I mean, he played well in this game. I think Matt even said he was like, at least on one of the touchdowns, he was like, bad call. Bad call by me. Great play by Romeo and Jordan. Yep. Like, just kind of bailed me out on that one. I think the way all his teammates celebrated with him in the end zone after that first touchdown, I think it was like the first play in the second quarter. I think that tells you everything that you need to know, where it's like, all right, like, this isn't going to be an ongoing issue, right?
Yeah.
Which is, I think, what everyone wanted to avoid. I mean, Matt really seemed like he wanted to move on. Romeo seems like he wants to move on. The team celebrated him. I don't know. Like, maybe it's annoying that we never get the full story, that we never know, like, why didn't he show up to practice on that Thursday. But if everyone wants to move on, like, I don't understand why people would dwell on the situation. Like, I mentioned to you last week, where you asked me kind of like, what do? Do you feed him? Do you hold back on him? Do you treat it like it was just another game? And I'm like, if you want to move on, you have to treat it like it's another game. And it seemed like they did exactly that this game. So, you know, back to your regularly scheduled programming, I guess.
Yeah. Not only the celebration, but the celebration in the post-game locker room as well after the game, where everyone exploded when Romeo got called out by Coach LaFleur as well. Very just excited for him, excited that it's done and over with, that it's not a thing anymore. I think everyone can hopefully just move on. And I think that's what's kind of the most important thing here. And then, yeah, he went out and balled out and had a couple of really nice touchdowns, great body control as well. And I think that's, both of those things are very positive signs, and you're going to need him through the course of this season. We already are seeing Dontavian Wicks with a little bit of an injury. Jaden Reed got a little bit banged up on the ankle with the punt return. So no, I think this is
Watson's
a very
just coming back.
Yeah, like, Watson's just coming back. Like, yeah. we saw this last year too. Like, almost everyone on that offense missed time at some point during the season at that wide receiver group. So you want the depth there. Again, I think he's going to be a very, very important piece for this team. And I think it was a step in the right direction. I want to ask you about that throw to Romeo Doubs. I got asked about this by a couple different people. Full disclosure, I have not graded that play on offense yet, but I've been asked by a few different people. I've seen the conjecture online. There's the extreme side that say it's a bad throw by Jordan. He's just chucking it up there. It's similar to that Dontavian Wicks play, and there's nothing special about the throw. We've seen the other side say, like, oh my goodness, it's one of the greatest Jordan Love throws they've ever seen, and like, I can't believe he made that play. How do you evaluate that decision/throw from Jordan Love? I think I have a take on it, but I'm curious as to yours. Hey friends, week six is officially in the books, and can we just talk for a second about how ridiculous the NFC North is? What an absolute tear this division is on. Three more wins this week, Detroit, Green Bay, Chicago, all pickup wins. Of course, Minnesota had the bye, but that's not the only winning that's going on. You need to be doing your winning over at Prize Picks, and Prize Picks is the best place to get real money sports action, and you can join over 10 million users who are already signed up. And when you do sign up, you get $50 instantly when you play $5. You don't even need to win to receive the bonus. It is guaranteed. So make your picks in less than 60 seconds and turn your sports opinions into real money all season long on Prize Picks. This week, I'm sticking with the NFC North. I'm going with Amon-Ra St. Brown versus Minnesota. I'm going with Justin Jefferson against Detroit. And of course, I'm going with Josh Jacobs against Houston. There are plenty of options to choose from, but just remember, whoever you choose, you can download the Prize Picks app today and use code Packaday to get $50 instantly when you play $5. That's code Packaday on Prize Picks to get $50 instantly when you play $5. Prize Picks. Run your game. What's going on, everybody? I am so insanely happy that football is back. And as excited as I am right now, I can't even begin to tell you how excited I am to be back at Lambeau Field. And this year, I'm going to be taking my oldest son to his first ever regular season game, and that moment is going to mean so much to me. Thankfully, as I search for tickets to the game, Game Time has a brand new feature called Game Time Picks that makes getting tickets to see your favorite teams play live even easier. I'm actually scrolling through Game Time right now as we speak, and there are two tickets exactly in the section where I want, and it's currently listed as one of their amazing deals. Section 137, two tickets, and it's just so insanely easy to navigate and find amazing seats at the best prices, plus have the exact view of the seats you're purchasing. I can see them right now. And my absolute favorite part, Game Time has the lowest price guarantee. You'll get the lowest price to the game, or Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. So take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code PACKADAY for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code PACKADAY, P-A-C-K-A-D-A-Y, for $20 off. Download Game Time today. What time is it? Game Time.
Grading's weird, right? I've gone through the PFF grading process. I did that. I never actually worked for PFF. I got the XFL job right when I was going to start on with PFF, full disclosure. So I went through the grading process and all that stuff. I went through the training. The way I think is the best way to probably grade passes, beyond decision-making, which, like, obviously, you know, if you're part of a team, you know what kind of, like, progression or
– yep.
You know, is it middle field closed, middle field open, what side of the field we're attacking, that type of stuff. I think the best way to grade balls is just, did your guy have a chance at it? Did nobody have a chance at it? Did only the defender have a chance at it? Or did both people have a chance at it, right? And I think that just matters in terms of just thinking about how to, like, limit risk. And then also ball placement on ones where, you know, your wide receiver doesn't have a chance at it at all, whether it be, you know, a ball is going to a spot that neither player can make a play on the ball or only the defender can make a play on the ball.
Yep.
But as long as your guy has a chance at it, like, so many of these deep routes, especially like nine routes and stuff like that, it's not just on the quarterback, right? I mean, how many times are, like, deep ball, not just nine routes, right? Or even – I mean, the Packers throw a lot of slot fades. It wouldn't surprise me if the Packers led the NFL in slot fades, right? If that guy isn't a ball winner, those passes are going to be bad more times than not. But if it's going to a Jaden Reed or a Romeo Doubs, it makes you look a whole lot better, right?
Yep.
But it's not really dependent on the quarterback. I mean, he could put it in a spot, but the wide receiver has to go make a catch in that spot too. So I think those balls – you almost have to treat them completely different than any sort of normal pass attempt. I mean, it's really like a shot for a ball winner. And
yeah,
to a certain extent, who you're throwing to impacts the decision of whether that was good or not. And Romeo makes some tough catches. So I don't know. I guess generally I agree that positive. I will say the play that made me wince the most in this game was the Watson one on
the which Watson one, the fourth and two, or the touchdown Watson?
No, it was the fourth and two, the one where Love got him right over, and I was like, good God, man, you're going to give me a heart attack. I'm glad that went well and you put it in the perfect spot. But if you would have stopped it when the ball left his hand and you would have asked me what happens here, I would have said pick every single time. So,
yeah, that was an
maybe I have no faith, but
that was a crazy throw where he placed that. I will give him a lot of credit for that. But yeah, that. And I have not watched that one yet from an all 22 standpoint. And from what I've seen, it didn't seem like there was a lot of other options and it was fourth and two. So I don't know. Well, I'll have to go back and look at it and see if there were maybe a player that was more open that he could have got it to maybe, but that was a ridiculous throw. How I get down to the Dobbs one is I kind of take everything into consideration. That was the third down. You're up by 18. You're on like the 20 yard line. So if you do throw a pick, you are potentially taking 3 points off the board. Now we could say, is Narvison going to make it? But I don't think that was going through Jordan's head in the moment. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he's thinking that, but and maybe they just would have gone for it on fourth and two anyway. We don't know that either. And neither would have Jordan probably at the time. But I look at it as, again, up by 18, third down, you get max blitzed and there's a free rusher and you're able to bail out and give Romeo a 50-50 ball to go up and get it and possibly put basically the dagger in him right there. And then again, put the ball in a place where, yes, it was probably 50-50, but at the end of the day, like the corner made really no play on it. And Romeo was kind of the only one who did. So I definitely grade it as a positive. I don't think like this is in the pantheon of great Jordan Love moments by any stretch of the imagination, but in no way would I grade it as a negative or a poor decision. I think he took a logical gamble in that situation after playing a game where he was really careful with the ball overall and went for the dagger right then and there. It worked out. Like you said, Romeo being down there plays a part in it as well, knowing that he's a little bit more of a physical jump ball guy that can go get those. I had no problem with the decision on that play.
Yeah. And then the other thing too that you mentioned that's important is it's zero, right? So there's no one else who can make a play on that ball. It's not like you're throwing a high corner or something like that in the cover two, and there's a low defender that can sneak in there if you tip the ball up and, you know, he has closing speed. It's a little bit more time to get under that ball and all that stuff. That play's not going to get picked off very often. So, like, I don't know. It's not as bad as the Reed decision was at all. And again, I was more worried about the Watson throw than I was that one. So
if you go through the range of outcomes on the Dobbs play, there's probably a decent percent, at least a tangible percent that he literally comes down with a touchdown, which is obviously what happened. Maybe you get a pass interference penalty, especially on those where the receiver's coming back to it and the corner gets turned around and starts grabbing. There's probably a decent chance at a PI or a penalty on that play. You avoid the sack. If you throw a pick, even if he does pick it off, he might be down at the 1 or 2 yard line in a super disadvantageous situation. Worst case scenario is probably a pick with a touchback. Again, maybe taking 3 points off the board, but you're up 18. Doesn't really change anything to a drastic level. And probably the majority of the times it just ends up maybe incomplete. So,
right. And an incompletion there doesn't kill you.
Way better than a sack, obviously. So yeah, I think if you go through the range of outcomes, and again, I don't know how much of this is going through Jordan's mind when he's making the split decision to throw it up to Romeo, but again, I have no issue with the decision on that play. And I think, you know, clearly it worked out, and I know you can't just be results oriented. You have to be process oriented, but I think if you even go through the process of this one, no concerns with it whatsoever.
It's not in the same realm as the free throw from 2 weeks ago or whatever. I want to bring something up before we move off of it. You said Narvison's name. So I have to do a little rant.
All right, do it.
So Matt is like, they ask him, you know, are you confident enough in this kicker? And he basically says, like, I would have sent him out again. You only have one kicker on the team right now. What else are you? You have someone else kick a field goal? Like, what is that supposed to do? That does not instill confidence in me that you believe in Narvison moving forward. Like, there are other options out there. You could trade for a guy. The Jaguars just traded a guy when they're on a 2-week trip in Jacksonville.
Yeah.
trade market is bustling now. Who knows what's going to happen with Hassan Riddick? He just fired his agency. I think he fired CAA and he signed with Rosenhaus. Like,
yep.
Trade market is going to start getting moving. And I think the trades might actually happen earlier this year. Because do you know what date the trade deadline's on?
It's on like, is it on Halloween or like November 2nd or something like that? Is it
election
later?
Tuesday.
Oh, it's election. Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. So I think they're going to want to get things tied up before then.
So we might need to start doing ads for bringing in a new kicker. Is that like election ads of like, are you the GM of the Green Bay Packers?
I'm open to all options at this point.
Bring me Eddie Pinheiro. That should not cost anything. It's the Carolina Panthers. Their season's done. Bring me Eddie Pinheiro. I will be satisfied. I will live with whatever Eddie Pinheiro does the rest of the year. I think he's a free agent after this year, if I remember correctly. I'm going to actually search Eddie Pinheiro because that's what I do. I don't know how to spell Pinheiro. We're having problems. There we go. It's EDDY too. I did not see that coming. Now I'm against it. No, yeah, it's the last year of a contract. He'd have a $2 million base salary divided by whatever the rest of the season is. So probably like 1.5 million.
We're not worried about that.
He's 29 years old. What do we got for Eddie Pinheiro stats so far this year?
He's doing solid. He's not missing under 40 consistently, which is the issue that we're having right now.
Let's take a look at Eddie Pinheiro for his regular season so far. He is 9 of 10 on field goals, 3 of 3 from 20 to 29, 2 of 2 from 30 to 39, 4 of 5 from 40 to 49. He has not kicked a 50-plus yarder. His long is 48. He is 10 of 10 on extra points. He is 19 of 20 on his kicks in total so far, Justice. Sign me the hell up. He's a free agent, 29 years old. The Carolina Panthers are not building around Eddie Pinheiro. That team needs draft picks more desperately than anyone in the world. Give Braden Narveson and the 5th-round pick, and you just move on with it.
Did you see the end of that Panthers game by any chance?
I don't think I did. What? Remind me what happened.
So this is amazing. So Mark Sanchez, this is the scene. It's Carolina has the ball. I think they're down 2 scores at this point, but they're pushing into Falcons territory. It's sideline shot. Bryce Young, you know, in his uniform, but no helmet on because he's obviously the backup right now. Mark Sanchez, who's calling the game, immediately goes, yeah, and this is why you need a veteran quarterback like Andy Dalton to kind of show you how to win in the NFL. Andy Dalton immediately tries to throw a speed out, gets pick six, taken back for the Falcons. I was like, good grief. This team cannot catch a break.
No, not at all. I definitely thought that they were going to go, I didn't think they were going to win a game all year. So they've already exceeded my expectations with their one win.
They got the dead cat bounce after Young went down. And they're like, oh, we've won in week 3. Maybe we can be a football team. No chance. Everyone's getting hurt. Derek Brown is out. They just lost someone else. I saw Taylor Moten was out because Josh Nyman is actually playing right tackle for him. And I had to look up why Josh Nyman was playing right tackle. Because I was like, I know he didn't get starting money. It's a mess. It's like J.C. Horn and a bunch of guys who are not going to be here anytime that they're going to be a winning football team.
No, they are a train wreck right now to the highest extent. So, with that being said, Carolina, trade us your kicker. You have no use for him whatsoever. You want to lose games. You don't want to, like, Braden Narveson's perfect for you. You want to lose as many games as possible. He will miss, like, this is perfect. Braden Narveson will help you get a better draft pick. That helps you. Eddie Pinheiro will help you win games. That helps the Packers. This is, like, you shouldn't even have to throw in any picks at this point. Like, Braden Narveson will move them potentially up in the draft order through the course of the year. This is beautiful for both sides. It's a win-win.
The crazy thing about the Panthers to me is, like, do you even want, like, the first overall pick if you're the Panthers? Can you take a quarterback? You're in such a bad spot, you should not take a quarterback.
I think you hope that you get the first round pick and that some team is willing to do some crazy deal to get up to pick one, and that's what you should be hoping for.
Bears trade someone else. You get someone else to draft Bryce Young this time.
Yes. You need somebody else to go full Panthers is what you need them to do. That's probably the best case scenario if you're Carolina. Get the first pick and then try to get a haul for it. But I don't know if this is going to be a great draft to get a haul for it one way or the other. But I don't know. There's
Have
always
you seen
somebody
all these guys dropping
in the draft. You mean
Who is it? The corner three.
And the injuries. Yes, the injury. Yeah. The Notre Dame guy just got hurt. There was somebody earlier in the year, too, who got hurt as well.
The ECU corner.
That's right.
He's out for the year. Ohio State's left tackle just went out. He's probably out for the year.
Yeah, there's like three top 45 picks, three or four top 45 picks who are already like done for the year.
Yeah, it's not great.
And I've heard like this is not – I've watched some players, but I've heard this is not a super strong like top of the draft class overall. But you never know. When then we get into draft time and everyone wants these players, so, you know, who knows.
Yeah, they'll be 50 quarterbacks. I mean, Bo Nix just went 12th or whatever, so.
True story, nonfiction. Packers-Texans, I know you started doing some film study. What do you got on that game? What are you watching for?
Yeah, so did you see the news this morning about the suspension?
Yeah, Mario Edwards, right? Four-game suspension. It's a noteworthy loss.
Yeah, so he started first six games of the year for Houston at defensive tackle because Denico Autry was suspended for PEDs for the first six weeks of the season. So you're getting into a situation where one guy's no longer on the team. The other guy's just coming back to the team, right? He couldn't be a part of the facility, anything like that, for the last 6 weeks. Houston's also a very odd team in that they play nickel. And when I say they play nickel, it's not, you know, hey, the team has three wide receivers on the field, we put out an extra defensive back. No, they play nickel every single time. Let me find these stats. So against 12 personnel, 96% of their snaps are nickel. So that's usually when teams play base. 91% against 21. So that's an extra running back, usually a fullback. Both of the plays that they played against 22 personnel, that's two back, two tight end, only one wide receiver on the field. They still have three corners on the field. And then 13 of 15 against jumbo, which is, you know, like extra offensive linemen, stuff like that. They're still playing nickel.
That's crazy.
Yeah, Jalen Petrie is going to be the guy for them that's essentially playing like Sam. The defensive tackle situation is a major question mark. I mean, Houston's been up in a lot of these games, to no surprise. I mean, they've only lost one game so far this season. But I think this is a game where you're like, I think we want to run the ball.
Yeah. Right?
Question mark at defensive tackle and an extra, you know, third safety on the field instead of a linebacker or another defensive lineman. Like, I think you want to establish the run in this type of situation. For sure.
And Tuoto is not the biggest guy in the world either. And isn't El Shire a little bit banged up, or maybe he was banged up and just got back? I can't remember.
I think he just got back. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I think you're right. I think he just got back, but yeah, he's a really good linebacker. So that I'm sure that's probably one of the reasons that they feel like they can play in that situation. But even still, I wonder if they go a little bit of a Cowboys game plan from a year ago when they had Marquise Bell and they were going super small against Green Bay. I could easily see Green Bay running a very similar game plan as to what they did against Dallas last year.
Yeah. So the league-wide nickel percentage versus jumbo's 11%. And Houston's 13 out of 15. And that's about as extreme as you can get. So I know they don't have a whole lot of tight end depth right now because Musgrave is obviously out. But, you know, they added John Fitzpatrick, who's a blocking tight end. He was the guy who was doing a lot of the dirty work with Darnell Washington and Brock Bowers were out there at Georgia catching passes for that team. You got him. You got Ben Sims. Who knows if Andrew Beck gets called up again. Obviously, you have Tucker Kraft. I mean, this might be the game where it's like, all right, let's figure out what depth we have at the tight end slash fullback situation. I know Beck technically counts as a fullback. I think you want to go heavy in this one for sure, especially against those edge rushers too. I mean, we didn't even bring those guys up, but Will Anderson, Danielle Hunter, they're both playing very well. Stingley is a very good cornerback. Like, you kind of want to avoid those guys if you can choose.
Definitely want to stay balanced. Definitely don't want to get in a situation where you're down big or have to throw the ball a ton because, yeah, those guys can absolutely eat on the edges. Rashid will have his hands full for sure. Zach Tom, mostly I trust and should be fine regardless of who he's going against. But either way, it's going to be a tough matchup on the outside. And, yeah, I think if they can run the ball, stay balanced, they're going to be in a much better position against this Texans defense. I think it's going to be key. What did you think of D'Amico Ryan saying that Jordan Love is the best quarterback that they have played so far this season? And it may have happened to play Josh Allen already this season.
All right. I see the gamesmanship. I see the gamesmanship. I think Matt blew smoke up the Texans' ass in the presser today too. So
he did.
Yeah, I think it's happening on both sides a little bit, where they're like, "Oh, I don't know, do we even have a chance?" Stop playing coy. This is going to be an amazing matchup. Probably, I mean, it's between this and then the Lions Vikings game, which is also, I think, a morning game. Well, morning for me on the West Coast. Those are probably the two premier games of the Week 7 slate. So,
very much so. That's going to be a big NFC North weekend, which is like every team just wins in the NFC North. Of course, you'll get one win, one loss, unless they tie with Detroit and Minnesota. And then we'll see if Green Bay can pull off the win against Houston. But that division is absolutely insane right now. Chicago has their bye this week, but we'll see what happens and which, you know, kind of teams take advantage this week of their opportunities, because you need to take advantage of all of them with the way this NFC North is playing so far this season. Last but not least, Aaron Rodgers, fourth Hail Mary, Alan Lazard, the benefactor on this one. Greatest Hail Mary thrower of all time strikes again.
All right. So this was back in, what, it would have been 2014, right? The Richard Rodgers one?
Yeah, I think that's right.
I, like, had just turned 21, was going to go out to the bars. You know, my friends are texting me. I'm like, no, I have to watch this Thursday night football game, right? hanging out, and I'm, like, about to step outside, and the TV's still on. And I'm like, I should watch the last play of the game, because you never know what's going to happen with Aaron.
Yep.
And obviously, he shoots that thing to the moon. I mean, I don't know how the top of Ford Field didn't come down on that pass. Richard Rodgers brings it down. I'm amazed. This game, I'm the dumbass who walked away and didn't watch the Hail Mary.
I was like, you and me both, my friend. I had to go get my kid for basketball, and there was like 13 seconds left in the half, and I'm like, all right, I should probably get going. And I probably could have stayed for one more play and watched it, and I did not. So you and I are both idiots, my friend.
Yeah, so I missed it. I saw all the clips afterwards, though. First half of the game, Aaron's taking a beating. I mean, every hit that he takes, it's like, this might be the one. Like,
yeah,
he takes so long to get off the field now, and it doesn't seem like he knows how to brace himself anymore. So he's just like hitting the ground
hard,
full force. And I stopped watching when we got on, so I don't even know who won or anything. But
it's maybe by three with the ball, 1:48 left right now, and second and five. If they get a first down, it's going to be basically over. So Jets need to stop, otherwise Bills are going to pick up the win. But just going back to Rodgers, it reminds me a lot so far of Favre that last year in Minnesota, when he kept getting hit so many times, and then he finally just got one that knocked the crap out of him, and he was just done. Like, he could, that was it. And it just feels like it is building towards, and I hope it's not. Obviously, I want to see him finish the season. I want to see him, you know, to see what he can do with this Jets team. But the more hits like that he takes, I question if he's going to make it through the entirety of the year.
Yeah. And Tyrone not being the guy, you know,
yeah,
that you thought maybe he could have been, is a pretty big deal. Fashanu is not even getting reps out there. He was their first round pick, the kid out of Penn State. A lot of people thought, you know, he was going to be the best tackle in this class. So things not necessarily panning out the way that maybe they hoped. I mean, obviously, when you demote Hackett to a non-play calling role, even though he's still the offensive coordinator or something, like, I don't know how that works. Salah gets walked out by security after losing in London. Like, I don't know. Be careful what you wish for. I mean, we're seeing
it's not going great
in Vegas too, right? Where the Raiders are holding that line pretty hard, and they're like, we need a second round pick, and we're not going to take it any of his money, or if we take some of his money and you have to give us a first round pick, and it's just no one's biting, and Devontae's just like, oh, I have to play this out. Yeah. Yeah.
It's where you wanted to go, my friend, to go play with Derek Carr, who they immediately got rid of. It's not been great for either of those guys.
You know what I saw on the sideline of the Ravens game or the Raiders game last week?
I don't know.
Deuce Gruden.
Really?
Yeah, the son, the little weightlifter son, the dude who's like, he looks like he's 5'4". I don't know how tall he is, but I know he had a photo of him shirtless next to, like, you know, those like kickboxing dummies where they like don't have any arms and stuff like that. There's a photo of him next to one of those, and it's the same guy. So yeah, I saw him on the sideline. I was like, wow, All right.
What do you think of Gruden's new YouTube stuff?
I have a lot of thoughts. Okay. I think as a society, I understand the man needs to be punished. As a society, I think we need to start thinking about the pros and cons of not having this man work for a football franchise and what it means to America at large to have him just running amok with us, right? I think that guy needs to be back in the facility. And I don't know if it's, you know, NFL or college or what, but
What was his transgression again? Was it sexual harassment? I don't even remember. Like, I've
heard he said a lot of things in emails.
Okay.
There was a lot really. If you want to look back at it now, it's actually really interesting because I brought this up at the time and no one seemed to care about it, but it's a pretty important thing. Those emails got leaked about Demoris Smith. And this is not. This is not absolving him of what he said. I know I'm playing right. Tight rope right now. I promise I'm not going to get you fired from your radio job. I promise.
For full disclosure, I don't remember the situation or scenario at all. So Justice, the floor is yours, my friend. You hang yourself if you want. I'm just kidding.
He said certain things that could have and probably should have been taken as racist about the NFLPA's leadership, who at the time was Demoris Smith. Demoris Smith was a very unpopular union lead. All of this stuff leaked the day before the union vote for Demoris Smith, and he ended up staying on off of the strength of these leaks. And what never really got thought about was that this could have possibly come from the NFL as a anti-labor, because they want. If you're the league, you want a union because you want to collectively bargain. You don't want to have to fight your right to exist in an antitrust lawsuit because you're going to lose those. You should not exist. You're a cartel. So they want weak leadership. And it looked like they were leaking stuff to in part hurt Snyder, in part keep weak union leadership in place. And Gruden just had to fall on the sword. Is kind of how it looked. And again, this is not to absolve Gruden of anything that he did. It was just very shady the way that the stuff came out. The NFL and I believe Washington were the only people who had copies of the email. The NFL said at the time they would stop at nothing to figure out who leaked those emails because they were part of a lawsuit. Still haven't found that guy. Interesting. Funny how that works out.
Crazy situation. Yeah, I need to definitely go back and read up on that. But his YouTube channel is an absolute trip for what he's some of the stuff.
He's nuts. Yeah, he's going crazy.
I think he's like that's his brand, right? Like that's literally his brand, and he's just owning it and going out there and going crazy. And if nothing else, it's some form of entertainment. But
I coached with a dude, who, so I guess this is like secondhand, right? I coached with a dude who coached with a guy who played on the Raiders team that went to the Super Bowl that year that the dude just like went missing in like Mexico. If you remember that, right?
It vaguely sounds familiar.
One of the starting offensive linemen just like disappeared and like dipped out into Mexico like the week of the Super Bowl and all that stuff. But he was telling me, the guy was saying, like, Gruden was interesting because he always – like, you know, there's plastic cups and then there's styrofoam cups. Plastic cups are like the clear ones. And he was like, you could always tell when he was drinking water because it was clear. Because anytime it was a styrofoam cup around the building, it's like, you know, you're in practice and it's burning your nose. And I was like, God damn. He's like, dude, he's just like that all the time. 24/7, 365. I'm like, that would be exhausting.
Yeah. I can't even imagine. Can you imagine working in that environment? I could not even imagine. And like, he's a Super Bowl winning coach. Like, he's a character to say the least.
I worked for Vince McMahon for a little bit, so I got a little bit of a taste of that.
XFL.
Yeah, XFL.
Did you meet him?
I met him one time, and everyone I talked to said every story is true.
Oh, I'm sure. And, yeah.
From like the few interactions I've had, I was like, yeah, this dude screws loose, definitely. He's not built like the rest of us.
I think when you like, I mean, just the business that he's in and like just growing up with it his entire life. And then, you know, he's living in a different world than like 99% of people. Yeah. Again, not to absolve Vince McMahon of anything either, who's had his share of atrocious things that he's done. But like, I mean, he's living like basically the character, like, it's crazy what he, all of it, but yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all. We need more Justice Vince McMahon stories at some point, I guess, and more XFL stories at some point. But Justice, I know we've gone a while here. I appreciate your time as always. Where can we find all of your incredible work?
AcmePackingCompany.com. We got hopefully every angle of the Packers covered. I mean, I keep trying to think of new angles. I'm done writing about the pass rushers at this point. So, you know, we might have some stuff on how Keyshawn actually isn't the worst defensive back ever. It seems like people are finally coming around on that take.
Yeah,
that's great to see. Let's hear about your radio show, though.
Brand new radio show. Super excited about it. Thanks for asking. Pack-a-day radio show. It is going to be from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Monday through Friday, 105.7 The Fan or FM, 105.7 FM, The Fan in Milwaukee. You can go to thefanmilwaukee.com and you can listen to it live there. You can also download the Odyssey app and the episodes will be uploaded there every day as well. So super, super excited about it. It's been in the works for a little while now. Finally came all together recently. We got all the I's dotted and T's crossed, but yeah, seems absolutely crazy. Pack-a-Day is now a radio show in Milwaukee Monday through Friday and really, really cool experience so far. So one episode in the books on Monday. We're going to have Lily Zhao on Tuesday's episode. We're going to have Wes Hodkovitz on Wednesday, Aaron Nagler on Thursday, still efforting a guest on Friday. So we'll see what happens there, but should be a fun week this week.
I always thought you had a face for radio.
I have a very strong face for radio. The best part about this, Justice, is they made two different graphics for one Mason, because Mason Crosby is doing a show right after me. He's doing 9 to 11. So it's the Mason Crosby show. It's the Pack-a-Day show. And Mason Crosby's little like nice, little feature image is like, you know, Mason and all handsome and with his gray hair and everything. And mine is the Pack-a-Day logo. They didn't even put my face. They didn't even bother putting my face on that thing. They're like, the less of Andy's face that we can get on this, the better. And they made the 1,000,000% correct decision on it. So no, it's absolutely amazing and excited for the Mason Crosby show as well. This is, by the way, where for a little while now, I've been dropping little hints of like, yeah, Mason's not coming back, guys. He's not coming back. I know this for a fact. Mason's not coming back. I couldn't say anything, but I did know for a while that Mason was unequivocally not going to be back with the Green Bay Packers.
Well, congrats to both of you. Marvison misses another field goal and you're getting text from me about trying to convince Mason to put the cleats back on.
You might be trying to convince me to put the cleats on at this point if Brandon Arvidsson misses another field goal. That might be an option still. So, yeah, we'll have open tryouts on the Fan to see who the best kicker is. We'll see if Mason can beat out the rest of us. But winner gets the kicking job, I guess. Justice, I appreciate you, Don. Thank you for asking about that. You're the absolute best. We'll definitely get you on the radio show at some point. We'll have to figure out. Might need to record it in advance because I don't think you want to wake up probably yet.
I was going to say, that's mighty early for me, buddy.
It's very early for you, but we'll record it in advance or something. But I appreciate you a ton. Go follow him at JUMOSQ. You can follow the podcast at Pack-a-Day Podcast. And of course, find him at acmepackingcompany.com as well. That's going to do it for Justice and I. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.